Okay, we'll move on to questions if you want now. Any questions at all? Yeah. Daniel?
Yeah. Almost all our political parties are led by women. Where are they?
Well, I blame the men. You allowed it to happen. You just let it happen. And then say, oh, well, the women have taken over. There's nothing we can do now.
Men are fit, though, aren't they?
Well, there is the weaker sex and there's the even weaker sex, it would appear.
We're the strongest person.
We've still got Jeremy Corbyn.
Living home.
Can I just ask a question relating to the very beginning of your speech?
Mm-hmm.
You described nationalism, which, you know, was something that could be equated almost with conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
If I may say, I disagree with that. I think nationalism as a political philosophy has its root in both the left and the right. And for example, if you apply that view to certain issues of policy making, you could well argue, and certainly my opinion, not marketing means a great deal, but it is my opinion that, for instance, privatization of the utilities is something that should never have happened, because you should not, in principle, be able to make a profit out of water or gas or electricity. All these things should be in public hands. The same thing, in my opinion, with the railways. I think there's a very, well, certainly a strong debatable argument of taking the railways back into public ownership. Now, if you do those sort of things, the roots of those arguments lie basically in socialism. Now, I know it's
clause four of the Labour Party.
I know it's an unwise thing to say, but I'm going to say it, and it doesn't mean to say that I'm equated with a Nazis, because I'm not. I am a sort of national socialist. A lot of my views are based on certain issues of socialism, as well as the profit motive in conservatism. But the national idea of putting the nation first, of patriotism, which nationalism is a political expression of patriotism.
Yes.
Nationalism is really a combination of both left and right ideologies.
Yes.
I think that is, that should be better understood.
Yes, I don't think that there's anything in conservatism that says you have to sell off your public utilities. I think it was just the attempt of Thatcher to gerrymander the vote, because she had to set, to give the well, she was targeting the lower middle classes in order and to give them all these goodies, so they'll always vote Tory. And she did succeed at that level by selling off council houses and things. So that worked for her, but this idea seemed to have spread throughout the world. Because, of course, it's always attractive to sell off things in order to, get what you want, because there appear to be no consequences. But
you did that with the monasteries, for example.
Yeah, oh, yes, of course, that's such a good point, Tim. Yes.
That was the first privatisation.
Yes, Richard?
Yes. One thing I'd like to point out is this dichotomy between socialism and nationalism is a relatively recent invention in Europe and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you've seen socialism triumph, for instance, Stalin was probably nearly as much a nationalist as he was a socialist. So was Mao, so was Ceausescu. Mm-hmm. When all these people were absolute monsters, but nevertheless they were successful by marrying socialism and nationalism. Now, the socialism we have in the West, which is not really socialism, has lost faith in public ownership and in anything really, and is anti-nationalistic, has not achieved any socialist aims whatever. So it's achieved nothing but failure for itself. Whenever socialism has been successful, it has been connected to some degree with nationalism.
There's no private enterprise under Mao or Stalin.
No, I didn't say he wasn't a socialist. I said he was also a nationalist.
Yes. Yeah, so that's a good point. Thank you.
Gareth?
I'd say Sam's point, but selling off national assets isn't conservatism.
Yeah, I didn't.
Laissez-faire liberalism.
Yeah.
The point about nationalism in Britain is it meets conservatism because there is no British race as such. We're a nation of four kindred peoples, English, Scottish, Northern Irish and Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
Nationalism in Britain is civic nationalism, which is loyalty to shared institutions, the principal one of which is the monarchy, the second one is the Protestant religion, and the third one is parliamentary democracy. That defines us as a nation. I would say that's essentially national conservatism.
Yes. But the attempt by Hitler, I mean, what he did when he joined the German Labour Party because he thought, well, if he's going to have a career in politics, the Labour Party would be the one that would get the most people because they're always more workers than our middle class people. And of course, I think he was trying to get the best of socialism and the best of nationalism, and then he called it National Socialism, and that was it. Of course, the anti-Semitism bit was the extra bit, but then I would say anti-Semitism is sort of pretty well established all over Christian Europe anyway, and if you've read Merchant of Venice or Fiddler on the Roof, we know what sort of thing went on in those times. But the thing is, you know, the national interest is sort of almost predictable in that, you know, in the Philippines, no foreigner can get to buy any property unless they had a Filipino partner, a Filipino co-owner. So I suppose that's a way they keep their property prices under their control. So foreigners don't just sort of go in and keep the prices so high that the locals can't afford to buy anymore, the way our government doesn't seem to care about that sort of thing. But I suppose in theory all these things can be reversed, except that, you know, it seems, very difficult to see how it's going to happen when no one in politics is prepared to admit any mistake. That they're not, well, I can't see them sort of even admitting that they've made any mistakes at all. Certainly the selling off of council houses, I mean, they weren't built to be sold off, they were built to house the urban poor. And if you sell them off, then, well, I mean, you're not using it for the right reasons, in the same way that, you know, you're not using marriage for the right reasons if you give it to gay people, because they're not interested in rearing the next generation. I mean, marriage was, after all, for the purpose of rearing the next generation. And really, it wasn't even a romantic thing. It was all about, you know, property between families and passing down property through the generations. We know that, you know, in previous times and previous generations, nobody thought that much about, you know, the romance of it. It wasn't a day of romance. One was just betrothed in childhood because it was, you know, it was some dynastic alliance or something. It's possible that the Romantic movement may have been the cause of the downfall of Western civilization. There's this, you know, this deliberate emotionalizing of everything and making, you know, emotion the most important thing of existence. It's difficult to sort of go back to you know, reason and looking at, you know, the reasons for things. You know, with conservatism, it's not even properly defined, nor socialism. If you go to the Conservative Party constitution, you will find references to the principles of the Conservative Party, but no listing of those principles at all.
That's because it hasn't got.
Yeah. Well,
the problem in this country is there is no genuine Conservative Party.
It has
the Conservative Party, as it stands, certainly isn't a Conservative Party. The nearest thing to it, you.
Mrs. Thatcher, I would just be like, made a terrible blunder when she
decided to pass the Housing Homeless Persons Act and the Housing Act of 1988. She said this was in accord with the idea of a property-owning democracy. Well, of course, she'd never considered was that it would lead to a massive shortage of social housing, some of which we are seeing today, by not allowing local authorities to use the receipts from the sale of council houses to construct more social housing. Now that would have been a nationalist ideal, because you'd be serving the people. What Mrs. Thatcher and the people around her, particularly Sir Keith Joseph, who in fact, he was a fine man in many ways, but he was a liberal. Well, what he wanted was he wanted to see the service of the property owning democracy. And the best way that could be done, in his view, was to minimise the value of local authorities. I don't see that it could possibly be argued in Mrs. Thatcher's time that the Conservative Party had any nationalistic ideas at all.
No.
And she repeatedly voted against sanctions.
Well, I remember Harold Macmillan.
And 101 other things.
Yeah, okay, Harold Macmillan did accuse her of selling off the family silver, didn't he? I don't know it was what exactly he was referring to, but she was certainly selling a lot of national assets off. But to the extent that Tony Blair had to promise that he wouldn't just go and renationalise everything if he came to power. And that was what the Clause 4 was, the Labour Party split about Clause 4 was about in 1995. Yes.
Okay, Chris Watts.
I
take Chris Watts, then okay. I'll take myself. Yeah. I didn't see your hand, so
okay.
I will take Chris Watts, please. Yeah, you had your hand up, Chris. Yeah.
Sorry, apologies again for my lateness. So you probably covered this already earlier in your talk. But we, no doubt you've gone through a whole range of threats that we face now to Western civilization. Can we undo some of this realistically in the light of political correctness, which I see as the biggest threat to Western civilization?
Well, only if we're prepared to defy them and say, look, I'll say all these politically incorrect things, you must do your worst. It's only really being prepared to say that and perhaps lose our jobs, lose our contracts. There is no easy way of doing it, is there? No. I mean, we've seen from the examples of these Muslim radicals, they're not afraid, and we have to be as fearless as they are. Or we won't get anywhere, will
perhaps
we?
Perhaps a leader who will be fearless may appear in America, perhaps.
Well, yes, there's an answer to that. Just on that, I'll be very clear. There's an answer to that, which is that we know in this country, we have books written about it, recently by a woman called Innes Bowen, called From Medina to Birmingham, that 50% of the mosques in this country, the latest count is 1,719 mosques in Britain, 50% of those mosques are controlled by extreme conservative ideas of Islam, by the Wahhabis, the Salafis, the Deobandis. And in those mosques they talk about kuffars. You're a kuffar, I'm a kuffar, you're an infidel. I'm an infidel because we're not Muslims. There's an answer to these people, which any government with guts would do and say to hell with the consequences, and that is to close down those mosques, the 50% of them, that are spouting this nonsense against our own people.
And the
failure to do this is a sign of chronic weakness, which will lead us to disaster. So there are things that can be done. What cannot be done is to imbue people like Mrs. May, who is a disastrous Home Secretary. I'll give her time to see what she can do. But to get into the head of this woman, that we don't want talk, we want action.
to pull them all down and build
that. Okay.
Is there any question from Rob? Yeah. There was a question over there.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
You're talking about, that's all right, with the politicians getting them to stand up. The trouble is everybody has been re-educated. All the young people, all the middle class. It's cultural Marxism. It is political correctness. And it will change, I think, and will come from the working class for when our whole culture starts to slide. And we can't afford things anymore. People won't be able to afford to have these political belief systems anymore. Mm-hmm. And once the Muslims start getting, because the thing is the police protect the Muslims, and they protect the social justice warriors, which are the extreme left-wing people, that they protect the Black Lives Matter, who are sort of the most racist thing that there is around, certainly makes the KKK, they were powerful, they're now gone, but it's the government won't do it because the people don't have the will yet, because things haven't got bad enough. And when it does, I think that's when people will start waking up. And since Brexit, we've seen in public speaking, people are changing, and it's scaring a lot of people. Well, this is what I think. I don't think the government's going to do anything because they're not affected.
But we're not allowed to say anything, are we?
Is there any possibility? May I ask? Is there any possibility regarding mosques? Any possibility a future government might do to the mosques what Henry VIII did to the monasteries?
Turn them into churches.
One way of raising a lot of funds. Yes. Dealing with the national debt.
Yes.
But they don't seem to be very valuable buildings, sadly.
It would be so good for housing, council house.
There's a lot of flats on it.
Chris Watts, please.
So I wondered if I could ask you now about immigration. Now, it seems to me that our immigration policy has been, I think the polite way, the polite description would be piecemeal. Sometimes I think we have no immigration policy except to just let everyone in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this is manifesting itself in some very, very unpleasant characteristics. For example, I do not believe that there was ever an endemic problem in this country with corruption. Corruption in the smallest sense of the word. We now have a problem with corruption, which we see, in the way that certain East London boroughs have conducted their voting affairs.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder whether you see any hope post Brexit that we really can bring immigration under control, and more importantly, teach traditional British values.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if there is the will to do it. We can, sit here and talk about these things, but do people outside this room care about it? I don't know. I mean, it just seems so. Do you even talk about it? That's the closest party that we can think of. But they don't talk about these things, do they? They seem to want to play safe, and there's Diane James. We don't know their new leader, and we don't know what they're going to say.
Give a non-conservative, they go on gay pride marches and things like this. But I can't see how you can be serious a conservative, aren't you?
Well, it seems that, although there are lots of complaints about the Muslims, it's really the Muslims who seem to, whose principles would be more or less something. Well, not the corruption bit, of course, but, the family and marriage and that kind of thing. Because they are social conservatives. And
they reject Christianity. They reject it. This is a Christian country.
Yes, but if there are not enough Christians to go to church, then...
If we challenge the Muslims, they'll be violent within seconds if they think their mosque or their way of life, even if they're living in Luton. And they know that. And in a way, our country's been cuckolded
just as many through extreme feminism men have been. And it's not, I always say feminism, women are people like men. Feminism is an ideology. And it's a Marxist, cultural Marxist ideology. And Marx was saying in the late 1800s about the breakup of the family, it's communism. And people don't realize what it is. It's all connected. And it came from, you know, the American universities, the long march through the institutions, re-educating the young.
Yes.
And this is what's happened, and the will isn't there yet, but when things change and things get harsh, it will. And unfortunately, we've had, I think immigration, I don't think it's a bad thing, I don't think you have to be white to be British, but these people are colonising Britain, and they are not acknowledging that Britain is a country.
Yes, they see weakness and they exploit it.
Oh yeah, it's because we're weak, we've been cuckolded. That's what I think.
The UKIP has no ideology. If they fail now, it will be because Farage and other people in the UKIP reject any notion of nationalism. That is why they, despite a certain person, namely myself, writing numerous letters to them, saying that they should seek alliances with the Front National in France and the other nationalist parties in Europe, they refuse to do so. Because they're non-ideological.
Well, the corpus, aren't they? Richard, did you have a question?
Yes, this is almost off topic, but very interesting anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking earlier on about who outside this room is interested in the old traditions, the old books, and actually work very well. Occasionally I write about it on my blog, and I find there's an enormous amount of interest in these issues in Russia, of all places, because they feel they've had their soul stolen from them through the socialist experience, and are trying to seek it wherever they may.
Yes. Well, you know, foreigners like this idea of a bygone Britain, you know, stately homes and people in Victorian dress and all that kind of thing. So it certainly, you know, sells to the tourists. And I don't know, but it has to be sort of organic and real, not, you know, a show that you put on just to... But I don't know, there are always new traditions as the old ones die away. And we just have to... see what it's going to be. Yes, Tim.
May I ask a question about national? I just want to put a question to you about national solidarity. Now, last year I went on a cruise to Baltic, and we had some excellent speakers on board. One speaker was a man, a diplomat, British diplomat, who had previously been retired. He had been ambassador to Norway, and so he knew a great deal about Scandinavian countries. And was a MP Lipset, and it is well known. We all know. But in Scandinavia, they have this fantastic welfare state that looks after so much and looks after everybody from cradle to the grave. And he explained that this is a belief, the great Scandinavian belief in this national solidarity and working hard at providing for those who are less fortunate amongst your country, is beginning to crack. And then he said, previously, it was absolutely central to the Scandinavian experience, but the belief in it is now beginning to crack. And he said the reason is because previously, when he first went to Scandinavia as a diplomat, they were one tribe. And it was quite clear what he was saying, but very interesting that a man who had been Her Majesty's ambassador to Norway should be so bold as to openly say, to draw attention to the fact that the population there was no longer one tribe. Now, would you feel that the type of benefit system that they get to have in Scandinavia or have elsewhere, the welfare system, is likely to be connected with national solidarity and therefore perhaps to receive less public support once that situation no longer exists as it did previously?
Well, I think people have been saying for a while that the welfare state causes a family to break up because people think, well, I don't have to put up with my horrible family, horrible husband, horrible, you know, whatever. I'm going out, I'm moving out, and the government will provide me with a flat if I'm pregnant and unmarried and so on and so forth. So the government and the taxpayer, of course, funds this sort of, you know, family breakdown. But sadly, I think what we're all agreed on is, seems to be that the welfare state is sacred and nothing must happen to it. This is what the right and left seem to agree on. And so this, this monster carries on, destroying our lives and our family and our traditions, because we feel we can't do without it. Yes, Michael.
I just want to say, that's the left wing does not represent the working class. And whenever I hear nationalists saying, our forefathers didn't fight for this, we should also be saying, our working class ancestors did not go on strike for this. Our working class, you know, the miners, they didn't go on strike for gay marriage. They didn't go on strike for mass immigration. They didn't go on strike for thought control. They didn't go on strike for welfareism for single mothers. No, they went on strike for jobs. They went on strike for better conditions.
Wages.
And they went on strike for pensions. Those are the values of the working class, which the left does not represent. It represents the values of the low-life vermin you find on the university campus who just come up with moral relativist, nihilistic rubbish.
So there you are.
When you're looking at welfare, I think the guinea pig that the welfare was actually the black community in America. And when they used to marry the black people, it was the welfare that utterly, totally destroyed their culture. And if you've heard of the economist Thomas Sowell, he talks about that. He came out of poverty, and he's in his 70s, he's a top economist. He's always been against what the welfare has done to black people. And he talks about, like, with the minimum wage, he says it destroys people, because he says if you're flipping burgers and in January, it doesn't mean you're going to be doing it in December. And he said they actually, no one can afford to pay, employ so many people. And it actually seems wrong to what you'd think. You'd think, well, people should have a basic living wage. But what it means is that people can't employ as many people. And the black communities in America are utterly destroyed. So in the cities, you've got sluts in black cultures, which just are appalling for the people who are in them. And I think that's what welfare can do.
Yes. Welfare means a big state. So, you know, really, we don't need a big state if we have our families and our extended families intact. But then we will have to suffer the inconvenience of putting up with them.
I just think the welfare state has changed its form in the sense that in the past people were expected to pay in before they take out, and that idea has gradually been lost. It's also not a very good idea to have a welfare state which lets in unlimited immigrants, so anyone can come into the country and take out when they have to put in. Can change the welfare state back to providing a sort of minimum cover and making sure you get contributions.
Yes.
A more contributive welfare state, I quite agree.
Yes.
Very good.
If there's no more questions, Daniel? Okay, good. Okay.
Gareth mentioned the institutions that people adhere to. They've been destroyed, they've been corroded by individualism and nihilism. There is nothing to assimilate to.
Mm-hmm.
But this corrosion is happening globally. So though the Muslims are perceived as the great enemy, in fact they've been corroded as well. Obviously the radicals are doing their best to fight back. Surely the only two states with the mass to resist this global corrosion is Russia and China. And only when Russia or China, either one, supplant the USA as the global power will this change, this whole system start to change.
Well, that seems to be... that would take too long, and I would hate to have all these things happening long, long, long after I'm dead. And therefore, I would like that there to be a more immediate way of doing things. And I suppose we owe it to ourselves, really, to point out what the problems are and to say what they are. And if the problem seems to be the corrosion of marriage, stopping us from passing on our traditions and our knowledge and our wisdom to the next generation, then surely we can all ask for the institution of marriage to be better respected. But I suspect people won't do that, because I think that they feel they're out on a limb, and you know, people don't really get it, and it's very difficult to explain. The consequences are not immediate, and then we're likely to be mocked just for mentioning the subject. I mean, I don't think China's having a lot of divorces, and so you know, Russia too, and that may be to do with a lack of religion or the lack of laws that support marriage. So you know, if there are no consequences to walking out on your spouse, then people will do it because you know they get bored and they're irritated and they think they can do better, and they're often encouraged to think they can do better. Often they don't. I have plenty of female friends who left their husbands and took up with men that I thought were lesser men than their husbands, but it's too late by then. So I don't know. I mean, the whole culture has to change, and therefore the law has to change, and we have to be able to persuade the politicians now, or put these ideas to them, or perhaps write a book and you know they'll read it. I mean, will they read it? I don't think they will read anything that or will vote for anything, because they have very little power when you think about it. You know, our MPs have even less free speech than we do. If you think about it, if they say anything wrong, the media are on to them, and they're mocked, and then they're demoted, and you know, sacked from the cabinet or whatever. So they're not going to stick their necks out for us if it means you know suffering you know any financial loss or loss of position. So actually, I don't think our MPs have enough rights. That's why they won't stand up for anything, because they don't see it as worth a candle.
I mean, nothing
they're
ever
not
changed.
To, though,
are they? The old show breaks down.
Yeah. And then we'll just be taken over by, well, who knows?
Media slaps them down, don't they?
Yeah.
Can I say, I think most of the public in Britain and the West are too comfortable. And we're obsessed with entertainment. We don't talk politics. And when we're less comfortable, you're going to start people talking about the real world. We can afford to have all these ideologies like feminism and all this other sort of stuff, but in reality, you know, men and women, marriage was a contract, and it was one we survived. We don't have that now because we're too rich, or we think we're too rich.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about abolishing no-fault divorce, but it won't get anywhere because nobody cares. You see, I mean, I say it all the time, but nobody gets it. Or people are already divorced, so you say, well, what do you expect me to do about it then? You know, so, you know, all the bad stuff has already happened, and most people have had the stuffing knocked out of them. We know our MPs are so weak and powerless that they're not, you know, they're just happy to be in the same position 5 years from now, and they will, you know, be very careful not to say anything that might annoy anyone. So.
Don't you think the internet has had some say in this? I mean, it strikes me as being positively appalling that there is seems to be no control over terrorists putting their material on the internet, pornographers putting pornography into the internet and corrupting tens of thousands of young children. I mean, I know I am a technophobe. I very much regret the advent of the internet. I very much regret the email, texting. I very much regret the ability of people to have mobile telephones. I think all this thing is a complete disaster for our civilization. I mean it quite seriously.
Well, we should break all the spindles in the land and go to sleep for 100 years.
I think everything to do with modernism is ruining this country.
Yeah.
And it's ruining it very, very fast.
That's what Hillary did.
Never used a mobile, never sent an email. Never will be.
I think we are where we are with the internet and the mobile phone.
But why can't we stop terrorists?
We know what the government did to the Luddites, Sam. Right. They hanged them.
I know I'm exceptional in that regard, but why cannot we? Can we not stop terrorists from posting appalling material or pornographers for corrupting people? It is shocking some of the things that can go on the internet. Mm. I mean, my daughter has two young children. She has to be very careful as to what they see and what they don't see. Mm. And every day, if you get a train today, my train car to London, you see 20 people sitting in a row, not one of them reading a book, not one of them reading a newspaper, all of them pressing buttons to get into their thick heads completely unimportant things, such as where did my friend go and have her hair cut or something. The very fact that David Cameron thought it suitable to give his wife's hairstylist an honour just about summed up the state of this country.
Yeah, well, very glad we got rid of David Cameron.
Sorry,
I'm
sure.
Very glad. David
Cameron was determined to trash what remained his own reputation.
Do we have any more questions for Claire? Do you think of a couple? Raymond, and then I'll. What's your surname?
My name's Rod Lonsdale.
Mr. Lonsdale, okay. Raymond, and then Mr. Lonsdale. Raymond, your question?
Are we becoming a secular state?
Secular.
I think we already are. Because you know, all the secular laws take priority over religious sensibilities. I mean, we have bishops in the House of Lords, but really all they do is go along with what the government wants anyway. So that they're not even, or if they don't, that they're just being, you know, very lefty and Labour, because yes, Anglican clergymen are usually that way, aren't they? I think there's only one Conservative bishop, and that's Richard Charters, and he's not doing much these days, is he?
My question is the church now Christian, or is the church secular?
Secular.
It's liberal.
Secular.
Right. Modern technology is antisocial and insular, and in cities it is, and it is antisocial. It's very rude, a lot of it's very rude. But one of the things that needs people is an important thing to realise is if they actually do control the internet, they're going to actually stop a lot of free speech.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there is listening to the BBC, all that left-wing bullshit, everything we get from our people in Parliament, everything else. The thing is that there is an alternative movement where they're actually telling the truth. They will tell you about Hillary Clinton's criminal background. You don't hear about it from anywhere else, and I know it's very frustrating for people who are not online and who never will be. But that is one thing that is a saviour, is the fact that we can actually speak about what a lot of these people are really doing, because they control the other media. And unfortunately, newspapers are dying, people aren't watching TV, children are watching screens on their phone, not watching telly. Mm-hmm. And yes, young people are watching porn from the ages of 7 or so.
Shocking.
Mm-hmm. It is shocking. But there is, it is all not doom and gloom. One of our hopes is in the fact that we actually can talk about things honestly. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can.
Okay.
What's your name?
My name is John.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that a government can get hold of the internet in a particular country and eliminate things like extreme porn.
Well, they can block certain websites, can't they? I mean, they already have the technology. They're just feeling a bit shy of doing that because of their, you know, this free speech, free expression thingy that they feel they have to pay lip service to.
They'll shut us down, unfortunately. They'll shut down anyone who says anything they don't like.
They should cut down free speech, but there are harmful things out there.
There are harmful things
out there. People trying to jump me down for 50
years. Okay.
If there's no more questions, I'll run.
I can get stuffed up.
No more questions, Dan?
Okay. Thank you very much, Claire.
Okay.
I think Claire deserves our round of applause. So. I'd like to thank Claire for her very interesting talk tonight. We covered a huge range of issues tonight. When I come to write it all up, it will take me quite some time. So I will summarise and put it in some form, or I shall email it to you with my next member's newsletter. I strongly agree with what all of Claire had to say tonight. I think we do emphasise sometimes different things in the meeting room. Some issues are more important to people than others, but I think we're pretty much set out our stall tonight. It's very much, you know, social conservatism and immigration and what nationalism means and doesn't mean, what the national interests we've also tried to define. And we've had a good discussion of moral issues as well, and religion to some degree. So even if people aren't particularly religious and going to church on Sundays, I still think they want to hear the church saying conservative things, not liberal things, and we don't really hear that. I think Bishop Charter might be conservative, but I'm sure he probably has endorsed gay marriage like all the bishops have done. There's very few gay marriages, very few people prepared to stand up to gay marriage these days. This homosexual juggernaut really has, you know, the political class has been demolished by it. Yeah. So that's one of the big issues that happened in the last few years. It's happened in America as well with the Obama administration, because the new Supreme Court supports gay marriage now. Obama supported it. He abandoned any religious place he had. He threw them all out the window. And he supports gay marriage. That's all happened in America. Even conservative states were forced to accept gay marriage, like Texas and Oklahoma. So I'm afraid there's a lot of unwelcome change there. Anyway, we hope for change under Mr. Trump in November. So our next meeting will be October the 13th, which is a Thursday, and our speaker will be Lindsay Jenkins, and we'll be talking about Brexit.
What?
Brexit.
Brexit. Is she for it or not?
Oh, Lindsay. Lindsay's one of us.
Adam, what did you say?
No, she's one of us.
Eh?
Lindsay's one of us.
Is it?
Oh, yes.
That's
Lindsay
nice.
Lindsay Jenkins.
That's nice.
She's very good books.
Yes. Anyway, but I'd like to thank Claire anyway and make sure that we appreciate Claire for her efforts tonight. I look forward to seeing Claire at all future circle meetings.
Yes,
we really value your friendship and membership.
Thank
you. Very good. Glad to be here.
I do have to raise some money for the circle.